This week on Barbell Shrugged, we learn how to become a world champion weightlifter from Travis Mash.
Hey, this is Rich Froning. You're listening to Barbell Shrugged. For the video version, go to barbellshrugged.com.
Welcome to Barbell Shrugged. I'm Mike Bletzer here with Doug Larson and Chris Moore. We have traveled up to New Jersey. We're hanging out in Zach Evanesh's gym, and we're standing here with Travis Mash. We brought him back, folks. We podcast with him a while back, and a lot of people were like, that was awesome. Get more of that. So, like, hey, why not? We'll go hang out. We'll hang out with Travis. We'll do it again. We actually got to watch you do your level one seminar in Pennsylvania.
Right.
On a Saturday. And on a Sunday, we got to watch you do the level two seminar that you put on.
Yeah, at the Underground Strength Gym. So it's been a crazy weekend, lots of people. I personally enjoy meeting all the different people. It's my favorite thing about the seminars that we do. So it was cool having you guys there, though.
Made it
a lot. It was a lot less stressful. Like I get nervous. I don't know about you guys, but in front of crowds, no matter how big or small, I still get nervous. And so, but having y'all there. It's like my buddies were there, so I wouldn't
hang out with your friends.
Yeah,
that does make it easier.
What I love about Travis is that you can tell you care. Like, the nervousness comes from, I want these people to get what I think they can get out of it.
Right.
And if they don't, I'll be sad about it. That's why it's a good seminar.
Yes.
It's really honest.
Yeah. So you felt even less nervous with the camera there than you did without the camera? It feels like that's the opposite of what most people would feel like.
No, I don't know, but I guess because it's CTP filming me, it's like,
yeah.
My buddy. Shaka Bra.
What's Shaka Bra?
Bringing it back. So,
Team Shaka Bra.
Yeah.
Go watch the last episode with Travis, and that will be much funnier.
Yeah. So, I mean, with him filming me, I wasn't thinking about the fact that there'll be like lots of people watching the DVD someday. And so, but
it's a familiar character in us roaming about.
Yeah,
I appreciated how simplified you made everything. No big fancy words, no big over the top jargon. Everything was laid down. Even at the advanced seminar, even though you did a beginner and an advanced, still at the advanced seminar, everything was laid out as simple as it possibly could have been.
Especially with the program design, and that's where people start using words that people don't understand, or they start writing out these complicated, whatever. You've all seen it. Like, someone starts drawing this thing, and you're like, I kind of grasp what that means.
They get way too indulgent with the programming.
I mean,
sometimes.
I could, but I think here's what I think, is that if you're super smart, you can make something complicated seem very simple. And I think that is the true sign of intelligence. Mm-hmm. If you have to use big words, or, you have to show on the board these mathematical equations that you might be using, if you have to do that to make sure that everyone knows that you're above them and smart, then you're using your pride more than you're really trying to teach.
Exactly.
So it takes effort to break it down to be really simple. You get so used to like reading training books and everyone's using that same terminology, and then you turn around and you just use that terminology.
Well, if you're in a coaching game, you can't be a good coach if you can't connect with people who don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Well, you got to think about who your audience is. And, if you're out there talking to other advanced coaches, you should use that terminology. That way you can get more information out quicker.
Right.
But if you're talking to like people who aren't advanced coaches, you should be breaking it down. Like you were saying, like, I think too often people want to impress other coaches maybe.
Right.
Now, you could be standing in the room and know, okay, there's five people in here who are advanced coaches. And you know what? I'm going to make sure that they're impressed. Or you could look at the 25, just average Joe athletes, CrossFitters and weightlifters, and break it down really, really simple.
Right. I'm reading a book right now by Vershansky on periodization. And I read it, and man, it's tough. I mean, we've all read those crazy.
You read it in a Russian accent in your
head? Yes. And then, I read it several times. Like, I'll be honest. I'm going to throw this out there. Like, reading comprehension, I struggle sometimes. But once, I get it, then it's a wrap.
Yeah.
But like, when I finally get it, I'm like, man, that dude could have said the same thing.
Yeah. But it's not your fault, it's his fault.
It is. I'm
not
like,
his fault, but
I mean, I'm sure that, he is very smart, and that's awesome. I can't imagine having the knowledge in my brain that he does. Mm-hmm. But he could, he could have said the same things a lot simpler. But,
I'll never forget, I went to a Vershansky seminar, and the guy was on the thing, and he goes, He goes, the key to developing the athlete is to enhance the biological capacity of the organism. You go, biological? Oh, you mean get in shape? You could just fucking get your work capacity up, do some work.
I know, man.
That's why Zach gets such good results in here, I think, because like, I don't think he uses like the term like sets and reps most of the time. He's like, just, you're going to get that and drag it over here, and you're going to fucking do that.
And he goes,
these kids
turn,
these little kids turn into fucking monsters.
Yeah.
Go to wrestling meets and hurt people, like crush people.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You don't need all that sometimes. As long as you know what you're going for, those are just words.
You know, Zach's gym, to me, is like a piece of art. Like, you look at it, and you just keep looking, and you will see more and more little tools he uses to beat these kids down in a good way. I don't mean it in a bad way, but you just
like keep, the mix and match dumbbells he's acquired. He's carefully selected. He loves all this shit. Like, that's this place feels like everything is love. It's not like some guy wrote a check and went to Rogue and it's got all new shit put in here, which is cool.
No.
But this is a special kind of cool. This place has got soul.
Collectors.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He went to gyms that were closing up shop. Who had really old equipment.
eBay and
to him it's like collecting antiques, you know, but functional antiques,
I get it,
obviously.
Too. Like the old York dumbbells, like most guys, unless you're kind of from my era, you don't even understand the old York original dumbbells.
They don't make shit like that no more.
No, man. They're all one piece, you know. You know, you don't have it screwed on. It's just all one.
Half rusted.
Yeah, half rusted.
I mean, that's how you get your iron, you know.
Yeah,
that's
no one's ever going to get my 20 hands kilo thin metal plates from York. No one's ever getting those from my garage gym. No one can have them.
We sell a lot of rusted plates.
I love the pull up, the little pull up mechanisms he has, the little balls you got to do pull ups with, or the little handles.
Yeah, they're hanging right there.
Those are impossible.
The ones on the right are the hard ones.
The tubular ones, you cannot fucking do a pull-up on unless you're really monstrous.
The balls are hard. The tubular ones are impossible. That's what, that's what I've discovered.
Unless you're one of Zach's wrestlers. You can do a 20 on those.
Yeah. Yeah. I did some rows with those over there in the corner.
Oh, yeah. I see the row.
I'm going to go home, and I'm going to buy those balls, and I'm going to hang them from the pull-up
balls. Yeah,
those
balls. They just look cool. They look cool.
Bledsoe there will be balls. There'll be an Instagram photo with those balls when they come to me. I'm like, eh.
We'll all fucking giggle like 15-year-olds at that.
Yeah. We'll have fun with it.
Got to integrate the snatch clean soap in there somehow.
I don't think it'll take much creativity to make that work.
So, with the level one, you know, what did you guys think about the differences? Could you pinpoint the differences in the one and the two?
Yeah, I mean,
they were obviously different seminars.
Yeah.
Level two I thought was good. Like you basically assumed everyone knew how to do the basics of the first pull and the second pull, and they knew that, you know, when you're going to shrug, you're not really trying to lift the weight anymore, you're trying to get down, get under the weight, and like basics like that. But level two, you were really going more into you know, kind of the like all the fancy terms that John has, like the Superman pull and things like that.
Super fancy terms.
Maybe not fancy, but definitely unique. Unique to John. You kind of went over the details of those, which because they're unique terms, people want to hear more about them, and that's what develops a lot of the talk on social media and stuff. They're talking about these little terms and if you really need to worry about them or not.
Well, the way I saw you teach like Archangel and Superman pull, it kind of. When you think about traditional second, third pull, kind of doesn't work. Like you can't teach second and third pull the same way you teach Superman Archangel. Like,
no, yeah.
It's just different.
Yeah, well, you know, we add in, you got the second pull, then I say delayed knee bend, which, you know what, not only John, but Greg Everett teaches the same, trying to delay that knee, the double knee bend.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, you know, as far as using the hamstrings, mm-hmm. As far as efficiency, nothing is better. It's just hard. It's hard to teach and hard to learn. And,
yeah,
you got to be strong to do that.
I remember the day I started using my hamstrings on my lifts.
Right,
and, things got fast,
real fast.
I was like, that's what it's supposed to feel like.
I
discovered it on my own. I didn't have like a coach going like pushing my knees back.
Right.
Yeah.
We originally learned that same concept from Brian Schilling the first time that we learned to like really push our knees back and get all the way to the top of that first pull, and he just called it a long first pull.
Right.
And that was intuitive and it made sense, but I think having the unique term on things makes people really talk about it and develops kind of a buzz around that thing, and it makes it like a real thing rather than just saying, I do that for a little longer next time.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
They go, okay, and then they forget about it.
Yeah. You know, we break it down into several steps, you know, bringing the bar from the floor to right at the knee, to right above the knee, to delayed knee bend, to knee bend, which is position one. you know, and then Archangel, and then back. I think that's the easiest way, because people, you know, you'll teach them these movements and then they'll try to do it and it looks terrible. But if they'll just practice that movement pattern over and over and over, and then they just got to go do it and let it happen. But
yeah, I think you got to give anytime you're changing, especially weightlifting, because it's such a quick thing.
Right.
You've got to give it a fair amount of time to settle in. Right. I've had a lot of people like, well, let's try it like this. Like, they do one rep and like, it doesn't feel better. I'm like, well, you didn't
it's
really
been 2
do
weeks.
It the way
I
you're
haven't mastered
to.
This shit yet. Yeah. What is wrong with me?
You know, if you make a change, give it a week or two to like start settling down at least. Yeah, yes. Settling in at least. If you're on your own, like sometimes if people start trying to make changes, they're not really changing in the right direction. Like, oh, well, I feel like I'm making the right change.
What I would
like,
do is every time you sit down and stand up, you go 3, 2, 1. You get, I was like going down on a toilet. You just reverse it. I do this. I do this. I do this, and I poop.
And I poop.
You practice it just always, and before you know it, it's, you don't think about it anymore. And then you can start training that lift, right?
Oh man, you know the coolest thing I learned. I'm gonna have to throw this out there on this whole trip. Was Allison, the owner of Keystone CrossFit, the level one that we did, was the squatty potty. You guys know what I mean by the squatty potty?
I didn't catch the squatty
potty. She invented that?
No. No, she bought it.
Let's get the marketing that right now.
Seriously.
Right. I'm very familiar with the squatty potty. I've been debating whether to purchase that. Or
it looks really cool.
I don't want to do it.
Her and her husband said that now that they've used the squatty potty.
Oh, they're doing it. I've never talked to anyone who like embraced it.
Oh, that's the thing. You elevate your feet and you squat down onto your toilet?
Yeah, you squat down onto your toilet and that's how you go to the bathroom. You do number two in a squat position.
If you're, yeah.
And now they're saying,
hey, people, I didn't eat breakfast or have coffee, and it's 7:30 a.m. on a Monday, just so you know.
We might get silly.
So what I'm saying is, like, now they said they don't like going to the bathroom without the squatty potty. They said it's like a whole new world.
I've heard that what I've read about it is that, you know, you're supposed to squat when you do. You drop a deuce, man.
Well, that's like, how everybody else in the world
because,
and every human ever.
Like
did
when
it.
You sit down, it fucks up the way things move around in your intestines, your digestion. Like if you do that for a couple of weeks, like supposedly your digestion is just so much better.
I guess you squat, you line up the tubes when you squat fully.
Line up the tubes.
Line up the tubes.
You know, the longer I hang around.
Very medical explanation by Chris Moore.
Not very medical.
The longer I hang around the CrossFit world, the more hippie I become.
It's a good thing.
There's a lot of hippie-ish stuff in CrossFit.
Yeah, people would call it a cult. I say, yeah, probably more hippie-ish.
I was on weightlifting talk at the American Open, and we were talking about things I do or don't do.
Yeah.
You guys, you're like a hippie.
A little bit. I see myself becoming hippie.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool. I mean, I'm from, you know, the mountains, and there's a lot of hippies up there. It's all good.
It's funny. All those things, like, I remember growing up and people who shopped at you know, the health food store, like the funny one.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, you shouldn't do this. And you're like, that doesn't make any sense to me because it goes against everything I've always heard. And so, like, I remember picking up, like, when I was, like, 15, I was a weird kid, picking up, a book, you know, how to cure anything with herbs, you know. At 15, I was, like, I was kind of thinking, like, no, maybe we don't need this medicine. Like, and I would read weird books like that. And then I would read the book and I'd go, nah, I think that's kind of silly. Like, I would go back and forth. I would learn about it and then kind of go back and forth. And the older I get, the more what's happening, what I see is like a lot of these medical practitioners and scientists are going, oh, you know, we just discovered that this thing does it. I was like, that guy said that in the herb book when I was 15. I was like, holy shit. I'm like, all right. And then I'm like, now I'm like way more tuned in. Like when somebody says some hippy dippy shit, I'm like,
hippy-dippy.
Not throwing out any babies.
I'm like, okay, I'm listening. And then I'll try. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to give it a try because you know what? I wish I would have like embraced it a little bit more fully when I was younger.
Yeah.
I would be in a better shape now.
That's why I wasn't judging. I was just like, you know, I'm listening to you. I'm like, maybe I should be more hippie. You know, you gave
embrace
me that
it.
Beard wax.
You're an inspiration.
What is that beard wax you
dude,
just
when
gave
Travis
me?
Mash goes from like one of the world's strongest people to
granola
man. Like I'm wearing hemp pants and underwear.
Hey man,
like that was my fault.
Yeah. Hey man, you have strong arms, but let's all have strong hearts together, man.
Let's love each
which
other.
Which we believe in.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
So you got my brief take on like one piece of how the level one and level two were different, but you know, let's get that straight from the horse's mouth. Like, how are they different? Like, how did you structure level one versus level two?
I think you nailed it. Level one is simply to introduce them to the sport of weightlifting. My goal is to make sure that everybody I come in contact with knows how to do the snatch and clean and jerk safely and proficiently to where they can progress their sport, you know, of CrossFit, mainly CrossFit. Or if they're a beginning weightlifter, to make sure they get off onto the right foot. And then level two is a few more advanced steps that we teach, you know, with my weightlifters, with John North and some of these, mm-hmm. you know, rabbits and my crazy weightlifters I have coming up. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit more advanced techniques. But now I really want to teach. We spend a lot of time, you know, teaching on the whiteboard about, you know, program design and also the truth about the sport of weightlifting. Like, if you go to a competition, here's what you expect. Mm-hmm. Weigh-ins, how to like drop a few kilos.
That was a fun discussion.
Dropped some knowledge bombs on me for the weight loss stuff. Like, yeah, I was familiar with some of the things you were talking about.
But sweet tarts.
You dropped the sweet tarts bomb. Like, I was like, what? Everybody write this down. And as soon as you said sweet tart, well, Chris saw my face. I was like, I just like looked in like, what is he talking about?
Look, you can easily lose 1 to 2 kilos in 1.5 to 2 hours with sweet tarts. I mean, I've done it. I have lost 2 kilos.
Want to elaborate on that?
Yeah.
Be like, I'm going to start crushing sweet tarts.
Put sweet tarts in your mouth and spit?
Yeah. You put the sweet tarts in your mouth.
You just eat sweet tarts. And that's not a weight loss method.
That's what I thought he was talking about in the beginning. That's why I was like, I'm listening.
Yeah. No, they're sour, so they make you salivate. And you know what? Everybody tries to come up with new candies, but nothing beats sweet tarts. So don't even try it. Go to sweet tarts. You put it in your mouth, swish it around, spit in a cup. Don't eat it, of course. And then, you know, the sourness just makes you salivate
like crazy.
Probably
the sweetest spit out there.
Yeah. What?
Oh, God.
And so
the sweetest spit.
People are gagging.
It is the grossest thing you'll ever do. But, I mean, if you're trying to lose weight, we're just, you know, we're athletes.
Not as gross as what you said about Chris Mason with a sweatsuit.
That is real gross.
Yeah. Said, open up his sleeve and just poured out.
Let
like
me
a
tell you that
water.
Story. That guy, who, Chris Mason, you guys might know him as Ox. He was a pro powerlifter too.
He was a monster.
And, yeah, he was a monster. And so we would, you know, driving from North Carolina to the Arnold. You know, we went there almost every year to compete. He would put those Walmart sauna suits on, and literally that guy, every hour we would pull over. And he would open up the sleeve of that sauna suit, and it would look like he was pouring.
You're gag right there.
You're gagging.
It would be like pouring out a gallon of water. I'm not even kidding. I would have the same suit on, and it would just be a little moisture.
A little trickle.
Skin. Yeah. And that dude, it would just like he was pouring a bottle of water out.
Man.
I know. So
I think one of the things you said, what I really liked in regard to weight loss, was telling people how much weight they could expect to lose.
Right.
And I think a lot of times I'm working with my weightlifters and they're like 2 pounds under their weight class.
And they're worried.
And I'm like, and they're worried about it. I'm like,
oh, come on.
Gain another 10 pounds. Why don't you?
Seriously. You know, I broke it down into girls, boys, weight classes. Like, you know, a guy can
Yeah, because with women, it's totally different.
Yeah. And they hold their, you know, the moisture much more. And so hold water in their skin. And so, like, a boy can lose, or a man, sorry, can lose 3 to 4 kilos. A girl needs to keep it between 1 and 3 kilos, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, depending on the girl, the lower the weight class, the less they should go above their weight class.
And this is why it's important to compete on a regular basis, is you don't learn these things until you compete. You know, I've learned that I can, if I compete at 77, I need to be 79, 80,
right,
somewhere in there. I know how much weight I can lose comfortably.
Right.
And then put the weight back on very uncomfortably, but still come back and hit good numbers.
Right.
I'd say for the sake of not creating or encouraging the creation of beef jerky people, we should say how to get that water back in. Because somebody's like, I'm crushing sweet tarts. Now I'll go lift. We should probably say, hey,
oh,
yeah. How do you get that water back in, Trey?
Yeah, the weigh-ins, you weigh in and then you lift 2 hours later. So right. It's not like other sports where you can cut like 20 pounds.
No, it's not powerlifting.
You can't cut that much because it'll affect your lifts.
I mean, I'm going to tell it on the show. If I were you, if you had the right medical, you know, people in your corner, I would use an IV. I mean, if you can. And if, you know, you got to time it, maybe I would do it. It sounds crazy. Right now, people are like, what is he saying? But it's safe. It's just safe, man.
Yeah, it's what you get if you had the bad flu or something, get dehydrated, and you got to the Mono Med Center. They'll give you
absolutely.
IV.
You know, like,
they don't waste time with shit. They don't let you drink water if you're going to be hurt. Yeah.
The first time that I went to Westside Barbell, I walked in, and a guy was it was at the Arnold, and a guy was sitting there with an IV in his arm. It freaked me out. But then I'm like, wait. That totally makes sense, and it's totally safe. Mm-hmm. And so, if I were you, if you can,
you have the right person doing it.
If you have the right person to do it, because you are sticking a needle.
You don't
want to
share needles with.
No. I mean, I guess I better be like clear.
We shared IV needles.
Gross. Yeah, and unsafe.
Always follow best medical practice.
Right. So, but you know, if you can do that, do that. If not, I would use. You know, make sure number one, eat some. You know, sodium. You know, eat food that is rich in sodium. And then Pedialyte is the second best. I mean, what do you guys do to rehydrate?
I have never cut weight in my life because I'm fat. So
every time I cut weight, I say, I'll never cut weight again. I'm going to diet down to where I need to be.
Yeah.
So my cuts mainly been for weightlifting lately. And I do a little bit of whey protein or BCAAs. It's just kind of, I've been playing around with both. BCAAs is probably better because it's going to digest much quicker. So I do like BCAAs and some like Gatorade, just straight up Gatorade, you know, get some sugar in there. Cause the water is going to be attracted to the electrolytes and the sugar. So you need probably, if you've been dieting down too, you know, you're going to start, getting some of that sugar back into your muscles where it belongs.
No doubt.
So I do a bunch of BCAAs and Gatorade, and I almost feel sick doing it. So what I do is I weigh in, like I sneak, every time I sneak just under, and then I'm like chugging as much until I get sick. And I feel sick until I start warming up, and then I always start feeling really good.
Yeah.
So it's cutting weight and then trying to put it back on for a weightlifting meet is not fun at all because you only have that 2-hour window.
Yeah, that's right.
So I know exactly how much I can cut, and then I know the other part is putting it back on fast enough. Like if I could cut more if I wanted, but then I wouldn't be able to put it back on well enough to compete. And this is why it's good to compete frequently, because you discover, like, I know that on Friday night what I need to weigh so that I can comfortably put that weight back on and perform. Because if I overcut, I won't be able to put on enough weight, and then I won't lift for shit on the platform. Look, Doug's got way more experience with, like, big cuts.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. First
with the MMA, right?
Yeah, it's a little different for MMA. Like, the way I basically did it, and the reason that Mike's saying you should compete a lot is, you can do it one time. You can say, the night before, I want to be at this exact weight.
Right.
And then if you make it and you feel good, maybe next time you go, well, maybe I can be a pound heavier.
Right.
And then you do it again. You go, maybe I can be a pound heavier and a pound heavier.
Yeah.
And you can be as big as possible because you can calibrate like 1 or 2 pounds at a time. Or maybe if you want to go the other way, you could say, well, I made it. Maybe it'll be 5 pounds heavier and you like way overshoot it and you don't make weight. And then you go, okay, that was too much. And now you can work your way
back.
Your
opponent hates you.
Because that's what I did the night before. Now my standard for MMA with a 24-hour weigh-in, which this isn't about MMA, but if I fight at 170, I try to be 10% above my weight, like 187 the day before.
Right.
But like I decided to do that after like trying a bunch of different stuff. Like I saw the wall one time where I was 198 the day before, and I was trying to get to 170.
Die.
And I only made it to 172, and I missed weight. But the other guy missed weight too, and so we fought at 172, and I was like the luckiest person alive that day.
Yeah.
But I felt fine during the fight because I had 24 hours, really more almost like 30 hours to get rehydrated and whatnot. But for weightlifting with only a couple hours, you can't have that big swing like that.
Yeah.
A couple of kilos at most, you know, probably is all you're going to do to be able to perform at your best.
The biggest mistake that most young weightlifters make, take note of this, is that if you're only 1 to 2 kilos, or what I'm saying is 2 to 4 pounds, if you don't know kilos, above your weight class, please don't worry and don't message me freaked out, because you're good. You know, you are fine. You know, if you're in the 3 to 4, you know, kilos above, then I can give you ideas to lose. But if you're only 1 to 2, you'll probably wake up below. So
yeah,
you're fine.
Yeah, a lot of times people will say, hey, I weigh this. I'm like, well, what'd you weigh in the morning?
They go, naked.
They're like, wow, I weighed 189 today. I'm like, well, what'd you weigh in this morning naked? Yeah. They're like, oh, 185. I was like,
you're good.
What are we even talking about? Why are we having this conversation?
Right.
This all reminds me of some of the stupidest shit I ever did in my entire life. When I remember one specific trip going to Columbus to compete at a powerlifting show.
I know, one of my relatives is gonna be really mad at me.
I don't want to be dehydrated and less than my best, so I gotta make sure I have my calories. For me, am I distorted? 23, 24, 25 year old.
This is the time you forgot your creatine and freaked out.
Well, there's that one time I was like, I freaked out because I didn't have creatine before. It was my first Powerlifting meet ever, which was Dave Tate's IPA Nationals.
Yeah.
Which is not a good decision to do your first meet ever, a national fucking championship.
No.
So I like realized that night eating a pizza at Macaroni Grill, I realized, oh shit, it's been like 4 or 5 days since I took creatine. It's like, fuck.
You're screwed.
I'm going to bomb out. So I crushed like 10 caps of creatine that night. I was like, fuck. I was just freaking out. But on these drives up, I'm like, I don't want to be dehydrated. Meanwhile, I had no problem. Like, I was fucking 370 pounds. Like, there's no lack of muscle glycogen, your fat ass.
You're good.
I remember driving up in my Jeep, same Jeep I got now, old trusty Jeep. I had on the fucking passenger side, I went to Walmart the night before, got a whole gallon of fucking blue Gatorade. Like, it was big family Gatorades. I drank the whole fucking thing on the drive to Columbus. And I had a giant bag of M&M trail mix. I was just fucking bang, bang. Ate the whole bag of that on like an 8-hour drive. And that wasn't my meals. That was, I ate a meal at Cracker Barrel. I drove, I ate a meal in Nashville. I drove, I ate a meal in Cincinnati. I drove, ate a meal in Columbus. And I drank that in between. At the same time, like, I don't understand why I'm 370. I can't believe I'm talking
to a heavyweight about this. You're fine. Eat your chicken. Do whatever you gotta do. You're fine.
That's what I said. Like, if you are like me, the weight cutting discussion is like such a novel, interesting discussion here because there was never a concern in your fucking life ever.
Let me tell you guys the craziest story you're ever gonna hear.
Oh, I'm ready.
So, when I was young and I was competing and I was winning a lot in powerlifting, I had this very extreme view on life. And so I'm very ADHD. Like, I mean, if I conquer one thing, then I get bored with it. I want to move on to something else. So I was winning at 220 and at the time pretty easily. So I'm bored in my room. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to drop to 198 and break that world record. And so, and for others that don't know, like, I was a really lean 220.
Well, you're 5'7", so yeah. You're like, oh, I could probably do it.
But here's what, I thought I could. And so, at the time, I was huge, and I was lean, and should make sense. Because when I was younger, I competed at 198. I was really good at it, and I'm thinking, I can get back down. So, but I just waited too long to lose.
What'd you compete in weightlifting?
In weightlifting, 91 kilos back in the day. Okay. Yeah, it was a different weight class. Yeah. It was 91s.
Okay.
So, which was, you know, that's the most athletic. When I'm 91, 94 is when I'm more athletic.
Right.
But when I'm strong, I'm at, you know, 220. But okay, so I try to lose this weight, and it's the day before, and I'm getting fairly close. And so I'll just say it. In powerlifting, we're extreme. This was the WPO. So we were using
anything goes.
Anything goes. So look, I was playing by the rules. Mm-hmm. And so I'm using diuretics like crazy. Mm-hmm. And I'm still got lots to go. And I'm in my bathroom, sealed up. You know what I mean? I've taken hot towels, sealed up the doorway, put the water on the mirror that Krasilowski stole from me and started as his own.
Sorry.
So that makes me so mad. And so
I was like, oh, like Matt used to do. I taught him that shit.
Yeah. I was spanking Matt when I was doing that. I got the hot shower going. It's a makeshift steam room. So I'm sitting there. I've got the sauna suit on in this place with a hood on.
You've created a tomb for yourself.
A tomb.
Yeah.
And I'm by myself. And then all of a sudden, I feel really weird. And this bead of sweat drips off my nose and stops. And then goes real slow to the ground, hits and like explodes and echoes. Boom, 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 boom. I'm like, man. And all of a sudden I got cold and I drop. Heat stroke.
Oh yeah.
I call my friend Ox, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, please come get me. Like, yeah, I'm on the floor like,
dude, I'm gonna die in here.
Yeah, exactly. No doubt I was dying.
Yeah.
So he comes and gets me, takes me to the hospital. You know, it was terrible. I get all these bags of IVs, you know, trying to rehydrate me back. You know what's
crazy? Probably took like 40 bags of IVs.
Here's what's crazier is that I still competed.
No way.
Oh, it was so dumb. It was so dumb. Like, So then I had to go, you know, I'd gotten down to like maybe 200, like 2 pounds above 198. And so then I'm like, well, I'll go to 20. It's such a bad decision. It was so horrible. Like normally, like I would open up 950 on squat. So I'd drop it way down to 900. And it
way down to 900.
Look, it bends like it bends me over. The very first rep bends me over so much it broke my ribs right out of the gate.
Oh, shit.
I still somehow, the grace of God, come up, got the weight.
You break a rib squatting and you it up.
I broke the rib.
Wow.
I mean, what people don't get about powerlifting, man, people see it externally.
Yeah.
They go, it's like a circus sideshow. They cheat with the gear and they cut. They're looking for every advantage. It's that, but really it's more accurate to say these motherfuckers will do anything to be as strong as possible. Like, it's the most extreme of all, intense of all strength sports. You go to powerlifting meet where it's death metal for 8 hours a day, and it's a bunch of serious motherfuckers who don't want you to win. They want to crush you at all odds. Like it's a different thing. Always fun.
No, the back room. Were you ever in the back room in the WPO? Did you
every time? See? Yeah, every time.
It's not. It's no fun in games. Like, we are not friends whatsoever.
Nobody's fucking smiling about anything.
I mean, I was always like, "Hey, what's up?" And to Chuck Vogelpool, and he'd be like, he never would respond to me. Like, it was no doubt.
He's warming up, and his neck is purple.
Yeah, and like it's like we're all within, and it happens a lot. Fights break out in the back room, and like it is no doubt like a boxing match. Like, we hate every. I never could do that though. Like, I would always be like, "What's up, boys?" And they'd be like, "I hate you." I'm like, "All right,
you know, we're all hoping we could beat your ass today."
You're not going to, but I'm gonna smile about it. You know, but
probably because you were winning most of the time.
Maybe that's why they hated me, but they
it's probably because that could be why you were like, "Oh yeah, I'm gonna win."
Well, that's the whole point I would like to make is like, you know, it's not necessary to be like that. Like,
it is look, not.
If I was
necessary.
Gonna compete in powerlifting all over again, I'd have my current attitude, which is I'm gonna have the most fun possible and be as centered and as focused and mindful as possible, because that's what's gonna allow me to be efficient when I squat.
No doubt. Let me give you guys this knowledge bomb. Now write this down. Here is when I decided to be. When I became a world champion. When I was in the back room. And I realized what was really happening. All I'm doing is lifting weights that I love to lift with a bunch of people that love to do it, and that's all. I'm just lifting weights like I love to do. Same thing in weightlifting. I tell all my weightlifters, you're doing nothing but the sport you love with a bunch of people who love it also. That's it. It
takes all the pressure away.
You're not changing the world. We are not. Curing cancer. We're lifting weights. When you can do that, when you can break down sport like that, is when you become a world champion. Just, I tell my NFL football players, we talk about it. They say yes. They relax. They don't get, you know, in high school, did anybody play football here?
I played football for like fucking way too long.
All right. Over a decade. In high school, when everybody gets so geared up and they're so tense and they're just like, they're going to kill everybody.
You can't remember your plays.
Yeah, you can't remember. No, you can't remember your plays, but you get tired. And you watch an NFL football player, you know, before they're playing, they're joking, they're laughing, because they get it. Mm-hmm. That is how you become a world champion.
Yeah.
So
I did think that was an interesting piece of the level one seminar that you gave when you're talking about program design at the very end. Right before you really dug into the program design side of it, you did talk about how to be a world champion, not just for health and to get stronger, but like if you want to be a champion, you got to have a group. You got to have training partners. You got to have a coach. You got to have people there to support you. You can't do it by yourself.
No doubt. You know, I love my Garage Warriors, and, you know, you can get really good. But if you want to be a world, we're talking about an elite world champion, you know, or in America, make a world team. If you want to be the best of the best, you've got to lift around others that are trying to do the same, because it's contagious and you'll feed off each other. Mm-hmm. You know, this is coming from Donnie Shankle, too, you know, and his Ivan. You know, Abadevajev.
Butcher.
Abadev.
Yeah, Abadev. So
Bulgarian weightlifting coach, name from the 70s.
Yeah, that Bulgarian, the best, the most world-renounded weightlifting coach in history.
Until he himself tells me how to pronounce his name, I'm never going to have an accurate idea.
Exactly.
I hear it a million different ways.
We'll call him Ivan. And so it was coming from him. He's talking about learning your minimums, which is like at any given day what you'll hit when you walk in the gym. And then knowing your maximums, like what's your best as of right now, group, you know, having that awesome group atmosphere. And then mindset, which, well, really what it is, Ivan would tell you PEDs. I take the performance enhancing drugs.
Medicine.
Yeah.
All the Europeans call it medicine.
That's exactly what Ivan would say. Do you guys know the story, like when he walks in, when he first comes to America? Okay. So he's like, oh, your athletes, they're very good. Very good.
That's a good accent.
Very fit. But where are my pink pills? And they're like, this is where the pink, you know, we joke about pink pills, but this is where it came from. And so,
like, well, fuck, I can't coach these guys.
And then he's like, you know, wait, it gets better. So then they're like, I mean, you know, we're drug tested. We have USADA. You know, all of our athletes are clean. And he's like, what is the point? And so, I hope I didn't get anybody in trouble, but you know, whatever. And so,
there's no secret, man. It's like
so at my seminars, I take the whole PEDs out of it, and but now I guess they're in there. I just told the world, but and I replace it with mindset because that should be in there.
It's also equally as important. Is your
no
mindset.
Doubt. If you
People
don't
get
have,
hung up on the stairway thing,
you got that right. If you don't have that, you can take all the drugs you want, man. If you don't have that mindset, that killer mindset, that fearless mindset, you're screwed.
You can go to any fucking gym around here.
Yeah.
Any of these little Globo gyms, like your Gold's Gym in any hometown, there's going to be everybody in there. Maybe half those meatheads are on some kind of drug and not
most,
lifters.
Most people on drugs aren't champions.
They're not fucking lifters.
No, 99% of them are not champions.
Yeah. So that's a really easy thing to say, and everyone probably agrees with that. But how does someone develop a really good mindset to be a world champion? Like, how does that happen? Is that something that you're innately born with, or can you develop it, or is it a combination of the two? How does that work?
I think it's a combination of the two. You know, here's the way I give people hope. We believe and paradigm shifts. You know, a paradigm is what you believe is reality. So, like, if you think, Doug, that you could make the Nationals, you know, that you're going to qualify for the Nationals in weightlifting. As your coach, I'm trying to shift that up. Like, I'm thinking top 10 or maybe podium. And if I say that enough over and over, you start to believe that. I believe as humans, our minds are very strong, and we don't use them enough. But at MASH, what we do at my gym is we are constantly shifting all of our athletes up a notch. And then it's so strange, in that little town, you guys have been there, it's a little in the middle of nowhere town. Like, we have, you know, over 50 Division I recruited athletes, and I believe because we built that culture. It's because when they come in, say when they're in seventh grade and their parents bring them to me, right away I'm up front. I'm like, you know, this is what to expect. We train champions. We will get the best out of your son or daughter. And if that is not what you're expecting, I will tell them other gyms to go to. I'm not being mean. I'm just like, you know, this is the culture we have formed.
Right.
And so from that point on, we're talking nothing but collegiate, pro, whatever. I'm shifting this kid's view up. I have a kid, Cade Carney. He's already got 4 Division I offers, and that was in his freshman year. And this is football.
Damn.
Yeah, he's no joke.
That's a good sign.
He's no joke. So now I'm over talking about college. Like, we're already talking about NFL because, I train the NFL players. Well, this kid is as good as them. I mean, I'm telling you, I know because I know how fast they are and how fast he is. So in his brain, if he starts to see that when he's in college, that's his expectation.
That's exactly right, dude.
Right.
Like, it's like,
I think that's one of the main benefits of having the group. Is that if you're lifting with a group of people and the best squatter in the room squats 400,
right,
that's the standard.
That's
as high
heavy.
As the expectations
that's
go.
That's everybody's reality.
Right. And so if you're – I heard that a good quote one time about leadership. They were saying that one of the best qualities of a leader is when you have a vision of the future that's bigger than the vision that whoever you're leading has for themselves.
Right.
So if you have a bunch of athletes and the highest squat is 1,200, you know, tip-top in the world – well, now that's the standard, and that's what you're chasing.
Right.
You know, the higher the expectation, the higher people are going to go just naturally. You don't have to force it.
No doubt, because if the high squat is 1,200, when you get to 1,100, you're like, okay, that all that is a stepping stone to get to where you want to be. It's not like a big deal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you're not like, oh.
As soon as that guy noticed, like, this kid, as soon as he realized, like, dude, there are people who have made the NFL because they worked really hard, have less talent than me. And the sooner he gets it, like, fuck it, I'm going.
I'm going.
Now it's just a matter of him just executing and continue. If he, as long as he doesn't stop, he might get there.
No doubt. This kid, you know, barring any injury, as long as he has the right mindset, no doubt he will. And so the paradigm shift for him is all the way from, he's only a 10th grader in high school. I'm already saying NFL. And he's like,
really?
Right. He believes me.
Yeah. Maybe you're right, coach.
Yeah, well, they know that I won't tell them something. I'm just going to shift it one step at a time. And when I shift it up one, and then they reach that, you know, that shift, then we shift it up again. Mm-hmm. And so.
Yeah, don't bite off more than you can chew.
Yeah, I don't want to, like, you know, if a kid is, like, obviously, if he's going to be lucky at this point to get a Division I scholarship, I'm not going to talk NFL because it's overwhelming. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. You don't say this out loud. You're not like, hey, man, if you keep this up, you got an NFL future. No. What about me, coach? You're doing good? Hey, yeah. Man, you're working hard.
It almost seems, if you go too high, if you go too high, it almost seems like you're lying and you're bullshitting
them.
Yeah, like, you're going to be the best NFL linebacker ever. And the kid's like 125 pounds. And like he's like a freshman in high school.
I would never even say it like that. I would never say you're going to be. I'm like,
if you do it,
if you commit yourself to eating right, we call it being a master. I think last time I told you master of the mundane, I think. Yeah. I don't know, but like if you do these little things, if you really commit yourself to the program, this is where you're gonna be. Mm-hmm. But it's up to you.
I like how you focus on like what it takes to get there instead of like just being there.
Right.
Because I think a lot of people
you gotta have the steps built in.
A lot of people are like, I'm gonna be a college athlete, you know, that I'm just gonna do it. It's like, well, you know, you're like, well, if you do these things, then you can do that.
That's exactly. Yeah.
That's what doing it represents.
Right.
When someone, and I get it a lot, because now that everybody knows that this is the place to be, to get to here. So when they come in, they're like, I'm going to play Division I, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm like, awesome. I'm like, have you ever, what are you planning on doing to get there? And I let them talk. And they're like, and I'm like, don't worry about it. That's where I come in. I'll give you those steps.
Right.
So then I give them a reality check. They haven't even thought it through at all. You know, I'm like, let's make some steps of how to get there.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break real quick. When we come back, we're going to find out the steps it takes to become a world champion.
All right.
Probably not.
This is Andrea Ager, and you're listening to Barbell Shrug. For the video version, go to barbellshrug.com.
Barbell Shrug is brought to you by you. To learn more about how you can support the show, go to barbellshrug.com and sign up for the newsletter.
CTP is keeping us on track.
Is that truly what just happened? We're back.
And we're back. That is just what happened.
Which knee wrap
Travis never knows if we're really back, if we're not back.
I know. Oh, yeah.
You remember that last time? Yeah. I go lock the door. He goes, no. He goes, really?
Yeah.
On the last episode?
No.
Episode 97.
What is this? What would this be? Episode
who knows?
We actually have no idea. Well,
I don't know. We'll figure
we're not,
out.
We're not sure when we're going to post.
Okay. No promises.
By the time you're watching this, it could have been years.
It won't be.
That'd be crazy.
Oh, what were we going to talk about?
I mean, the level.
I made this crazy claim.
Oh, yeah, you did claim that we're going to talk about how to be a world champion. So, but I think we pretty much
all
like
the secrets. Spill them.
Yeah, minus the PEDs. You know, I think we gave the mindset being the most. Well, you got to have genetics. Let's be serious. I mean, with me, depending on genetics for the sport that you intend on. Being a world champion.
That's right. You're not going to go be a world champion at basketball.
No, I'm not. You know, even though I was really good.
even if you do all the mundane.
He's like, I could have been.
There's a balance between what's possible, and then the mundane execution of a plan, then the genetic potential, then you know, having everything together.
Maybe if you're 5'7", if you can squat 1,000 pounds, you probably jump pretty good.
I can jump really good.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
We need some CTP cam footage of him dunking a basketball.
I gotta get warmed up. I just, you know, believe it or not,
he's
it
also
was
40.
Yeah, I know, but look, this is a true story. I lost a lot of weight, got down to like the 207, maybe when was it? 3 or 4 months ago. Mm-hmm. And I dunked again.
Oh, really?
40 years old. I know what. Okay, I'm gonna do it again just so I can get that on video.
Got a video.
Yeah. What do you mean regulation high, man? Yeah.
You can't say I dunked a ball and let that be like 8-9 feet.
9 feet, that's gay. No.
I can dunk on a 10-footer if I have a trampoline.
Yeah, well, that's pretty good.
I can touch the bottom of the net when I jump.
Nah, I so here to bring us back on track, talking about your seminar and whatnot. Everyone likes to hear about programming.
Right.
And in the level one and in level two, you covered a few things that were the same and some things that were a little more advanced on the advanced seminar.
Right.
But the things that you covered on both, maybe you could talk about those and specifically how you kind of stagger your volume and intensity over that 4-week cycle.
Right. Well, let me make it, gosh, it's going to be cool, like on a podcast to simplify it. What really we do, you take a, number one, you got to know your volume. So if you don't know your volume, then this is not going to make any sense. So you, if you don't know it, here's how you get it. You got to take, you know, your poundage times the reps times the sets of everything you do throughout the entire week. So if you don't know it now, go figure it out. So then you take your normal volume week one. Week two, you purposely take it too high. You know, let's say that, I'm just going to throw an easy number. Say you're at 10,000 for the week, purposely take it to 12,000, something crazy. You know, overtrain. I don't like the word overtrain, but you're going to like beat yourself down. You're not going to feel good in week two. Week three, you're going to drop the volume, keep the intensity high, meaning you're going to go heavy. Week four, deload. Week five, you're going to come back to week one plus a little. There you have it. Did that make sense?
That's all you need
to know. That's really it. And then over time, that just continues to climb.
So you're going
to
have more volume week five than week one?
Right. Just a little. You know, so like if you start out 10,000, 10,500. Over a year's time, you've increased your volume a ton. But that's your body breaking down or feeling tired or
for
whatnot.
Deload, are you drop the intensity and the volume?
No, here's the thing. With deload, you know, used to I would drop everything down. Like I would drop the snatches and clean jerks below 85%, mm-hmm. and the squats to like crazy, like 50 and 60%, you know? And I found that most of my athletes, when they came back, their CNS systems were just had unlearned some of the exercises.
Kind of lose that edge.
You get untuned.
Yeah. You do get untuned. Well, here's the thing with weightlifting, because it's so fast, there's research that says anything below 85%, the CNS perceives that as something totally different. You know, it is used to doing 85% and above. And so we don't drop, even deload, below 85 to 90% on the snatch, clean and jerk. And the squats, we might drop it to 80% or 85%, but we don't drop the significant, you know, like the 50 and 60%. It just stay at home. You're gonna do that.
The biggest mistake people make is that they take they either drop everything down, like you said, or they drop the weight down and they let the reps stay still high. Like, like in a bench, maybe. Okay. Well, I hit it. Now I'm going to take a break. I'll just do like this much for a couple sets of 20 or whatever. Like, you're doing actually, you're coming away from that more tired than
more volume.
It's more volume. The reps you got to take down.
That
keep
would be
the weight heavy.
That would be a rookie who doesn't understand volume, you know, like, yeah. We're going to drop the percentage down, but we're going to do more reps. Well,
is that math equation?
Dude, 200 times 20 is a lot. Yeah. You know, it's a lot more than 300 times 3. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so like that's how we drop it down. And
so week one's your normal volume. Week two, you're basically overtraining
on purpose
for the most part.
Yeah.
At the end of week two, you should pretty much feel like shit. You should feel like you did too much.
Yeah. You should feel beat down. Mm-hmm. You know, like his appetite. It will start to like have trouble eating. Mm-hmm. You know, you might have trouble sleeping. Now, what I would recommend during week two is try to help your body adapt to this. Here's what we're trying to do. We're trying to cause adaptation. So, like, you know, increase what you're eating, increase what, you know, the sleep that you're getting, you know, increase the soft tissue work that you might be getting. Like, we use the heck out of ART, Graston. You know, our chiropractor, Dr. Gray, is a Mac Daddy. He's been mine. He was mine even when I was going to the WPO championships. He would come with me to the Arnold Classic. Okay. But anyway, so he is our chiropractor on staff, mm-hmm. you know, helping my guys recover. Mm-hmm. So you got to up that too during week two. And so,
okay. So week one, normal, week two, extra high. And then week three, you're dropping the volume way down, but keeping the weights heavy, the intensity mm-hmm. high, snatching clean above 85%.
Right.
But then on squats, do you drop below 85% and do anything? How do you work with
on
the squats on week three? Yeah.
On week three, no, we're going heavy. Week
heavy
three,
on
everything's
squats and
heavy.
Cleans.
Volume is low, but intensity is high. So we're going to go heavy on everything. We're
so you use the 85% rule for squats as well as snatches and cleans?
Right. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay, and then week four?
Sorry. Sorry. The 85% rule does not apply to squat because it's slower. So, like, for example, since it's slower, the body perceives it, whether it's 60% or whether it's 90%, as a squat.
Okay. But just, yeah, that was a leading question. I thought I heard you all wrong in your seminar.
No. Yeah, you got me there for a second. Okay, no. You can drop the weight down on the squats. I still don't go on deload week really low. I just might do 80% for three singles. You know what I mean?
I never found a heavy squat to be that fatiguing.
No.
If you're doing 5x5, you get crushed. If you work up to a heavy single and stop, it's like, to me, I do that most of the time as a warm-up, actually.
Right.
I get moving and I do that.
That deload thing, that extreme deload thing, came from the powerlifting, the geared powerlifting. You do need a break. It's a beatdown, dude. You put on that squat suit and you're trying to do 1,000, 1,100 pounds. You need a break. And not waiting.
We were just watching that video 30 seconds ago, right before we started the second half of the show, where the guy took like four guys to wrap his knees. The guy that just set that record,
he just squatted 1,000. Audience, 15. You can YouTube this lift. He just squatted with just the bar on his back and a singlet, no suit, and some knee wraps. They posted. Mark Bell posted a video of three grown men, all guys who probably bench 600-700 pounds. Pulling up that knee wrap and laying it over like they're
with all they had.
With all they had. All these guys are world class powerlifters. I don't know how his legs weren't just like, cut right in half.
I never did that. That is one thing I never did. I always wrapped my own knees. I hated that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can just feel the pain of that guy. Like, knee wraps hurt worse than anything.
Oh, yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah. People say, I have this a lot quite often because I still wear them every time I do anything, but I wrap them very loose like a knee sleeve because I don't knee sleeves because they don't fit well.
Right.
But when people see that, they go, oh, you're cheating. Like, if you can walk for more than 30 seconds in knee sleeves, you're not really cheating.
You're not doing it right. You're not
legged walk.
Yeah, if they're doing what they're supposed to be doing, you can tell because like you get a zombie walk.
I've had
the face will not be.
Richard used to put wraps on me when I would do a little bit of powerlifting. He's like, let's try out these knee wraps. I'm like, oh god.
Yeah,
Richard would put them on me. Big powerlifting guy. Like, he just strap them on me like, and he's like shaking, putting them on. I'm like. I do my squat. I'm like, get them off. I'm trying to rip them off. Yeah.
but for weightlifting, I say, I would wear a springy, stretchy knee wrap when I do my heavy squats. You just tie them up to get a little support, but you can still get down all the way. You don't take them off between sets. Like, I think it's a very good thing to have.
No doubt. Yeah, John uses Ace Bandage when he does his squats. Yeah. And so,
You can't make them too excessive, but it just gives you a little support, a little confidence.
A little support.
You're going to lift more because you feel protected.
Yeah, and the compression. He's been weightlifting for 8 years now, so his knees... there's
a little extra
inflammation in his knees, so that support takes it away.
Yeah. So. And look at all the best lifters in the world, like guys like Klokov, whatever, they're all gonna use some tools to help them feel better so they keep training.
Yeah.
Like wrist straps, if your wrists get beat up from 10, 20 years of lifting, it's not a bad thing to brace that wrist.
No, I know, man. People are like, my wrist hurts today, I'm gonna take the day off. My
dude,
tape your wrist, man. I mean, you know what, like a guy like that, if someone says things like that to me, hear this if you want to be on my weightlifting team. If you're going to cry about your wrist and there's nothing on it, you're not trying to work through it, don't come work out. Don't try to be on my team.
Gold's Gym is down the street.
Seriously. And there's other weightlifting teams that's cool. Not at mine. I'm like, you're gay. Get out of here, So, yeah. Yeah.
All right, I'm curious about one thing that we missed, which was during week three, how you say the intensity's high.
Right.
Are we going 100% on that?
No, I mean, yeah, we might drop it to, bring it up to heavy singles, or we do a lot of rep maxes. So maybe a 3-rep, 2-rep max, depending on where we're at, So we do, we don't use percentages as much except downsets. Mm-hmm. So we'll go to people in my programming.
This happens during week one and week two, you're fighting rep maxes as well, right?
Yeah, we're rep maxing too.
But they're, okay.
Well, yeah, but they're just, let's say that on week two, if we're going 3-rep max, and then we might be doing a downset of -5 and a downset of -10. Well, in week four, we might just be going straight 3-rep max. And now I'm letting my lifters focus on that 3-rep max. You know what I mean? If you know all you have to do is that 1 3-rep max, we all know we're going to go for it and we're going to do more.
Oh, yeah.
But if we know we got 2 downsets coming, you're going to pull it a little short. I mean, we're human.
And that's okay.
That's okay.
You build that into the plan and you'll be all right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know that the next week is where we're really going to test it. you're probably going to leave a little bit in the tank. Maybe not.
You're programming so what happens for on human week nature four? A little bit.
I am programming for human nature.
There you
That's
go.
Exactly.
You
right.
have to. So what happens on week four?
Week four, the deload week is just, you know, real chill. We'll probably go to 85, somewhere between 85% and 90% on snatch and clean and jerk. And then on the squats, we'll go right around 80%. You know, three reps, you know, on the squats, maybe one to two on the snatch, clean and jerk. Nice and easy. Not a lot of sets. Mm-hmm. Let the body recover. Lots and lots of soft tissue that week. Active recovery too. We do a lot of sled pulling. All my guys, you know, pull sleds as active recovery.
So you keep using percentages in your examples, but when you're riding your programming, are you riding 3RM, 2RM? And then yes. on the deload week, are you riding 3RM or are you just riding 80%
On the deload week, I'm probably going to use a percent. That's a great question. Mm-hmm. You know, then I'm going to go X percent because then I want to make sure I keep them below. Because if you put an RM, that's going to be an RM. I'm trying to keep them.
These know, guys down. Won't control themselves. They'll go for it.
They're going to go for it. No.
Even if they feel like shit, they'll try to go for it probably.
So that is the 1 week we'll use percentages.
So are you riding full 4 week blocks all in one stretch? You write the next 4 weeks and then you follow it, or do you write you know how you're gonna stagger it,
right.
but you wait till each week completes and then you write next week's workouts.
No, yeah.
Based on what's happening that week.
Actually for John, I have his entire workout written until 2020. Which took me forever. I know.
Sounds time consuming.
It sounds crazy.
Do you alter it all the time? Adjust it and tweak it. And
it's a living.
You just kind of know where you're heading. Yeah. You got to know like where on the map you're trying to get to. But then you adjust the trip as you go.
Right. What we learned, for example, Mondays suck for him because he does a lot of the seminars. So I'm not going to be. I know that his coaches of the past used to fight him on it. I'm not going to fight him on taking care of his family. So what I'll do is on Mondays the volume will be a little lower than like Wednesdays, and so I'm just anticipating what's going to happen. So yeah, I had to like switch the game plan right there, and it will constantly be if we see a weakness. Like who would have thought that that with John, his thoracic spine and upper back, there would be a weakness. You'd think he snatches 166 kilos that his back's going to be perfect, but we found that weakness. So guess what? We added things to address that.
Mm-hmm.
So all my athletes, it's a living document. You know, it's going to like change as they change and as injuries come.
So John North. He's talking about John North.
Oh, yeah,
you are John North's coach.
Yeah,
right
I am
now.
John North's coach. So. Episode 50.
So if someone comes to you and they say, I got a hurt wrist, you don't just say, well, quit being a pussy and just go do whatever was already programmed. Do you make little changes to maybe spare their wrist a little bit?
Depends on how hurt it is. You know, like, you know, you have to learn your athletes. I won't name any names, but like I know certain athletes, their idea of a hurt wrist is it's just aching. And I want to be like, shut up, you know. But then I also know, like, if something's hurting, something's hurt. You know, like, then I'm like going to be, my eyes are going to open up a little wider and I'm going to be like, uh-oh. You know, but so you got to know your athlete. But like I said, if they have a major wrist, yeah, we'll work around it. Like, you know, one of my younger athletes has got an issue right now with wrist. So if I have to, we'll go away from the clean. You know, we'll do clean pulls and like front squats if we can do front squats. So yeah, we'll work around it. But, you know, I want them to do whatever, like use tape their wrists, use wrist wraps, use whatever you can to like go through that.
Mm-hmm.
But
so coming out of a powerlifting background, powerlifters use a lot of assistance movements on top of the big three lifts.
Right.
Did you incorporate that into the training of the weightlifters as well? You guys do a lot of assistance movements?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I learned a lot from Louis Simmons. I don't agree with everything he says about weightlifting, but I definitely agree with, like, if I see a weakness, I'm going to target it. It only makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know, look at the Chinese. They do a ton of assistance, and guess what? They're kicking everyone's butt. So maybe
they laugh at us for doing knee extensions all you want, but they get a result. There's
whatever.
Some method there.
They're winning.
Yeah.
We're not. So maybe instead of laughing, we should take note. That's what I do. You know, a lot of people gave Louis Simmons a hard time, but maybe instead of giving him such a hard time, they should see, can we learn something from him? Because no doubt, if you're around that man for any amount of time, you're going to learn things. Mm-hmm. And his ability.
He's happy to teach you.
Dude. And yeah, he's happy to teach you. Mm-hmm. And that guy, as far as targeting weaknesses, is brilliant. And, you know, like a lot of weightlifting coaches that need to take note. So obviously, what we've done over the last several years, you know, we haven't gotten any medals. So let's change and adapt. Instead of like, you know, here's another thing for American coaches. Instead of looking at other, you know, countries, maybe why don't we for once be proactive and think for ourselves and try to go advanced past them instead of copying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everybody's got this fucking attitude where if a coach says one thing you don't agree with, somehow you think you'll just throw the baby out with the fucking bathwater. Nothing he says must be right. Like, look at Louis. He'll say, like I always say, he'll say one thing that is just, oh yeah, I agree. One thing that's crazy as shit. One thing that is really insightful.
No
doubt.
He's
not filthy. He's just like, maybe this, maybe this, maybe this. And yeah, you don't have to do reverse band power cleans.
Right.
If you don't want to, maybe that is not a good idea. Maybe we wouldn't do that. But we would target thoracic spine issue with a certain goofy exercise that it's all it's doing is trying to get that point, because you're not going to get that just by your squats. You're not going to get that just by your clean.
It's good to have one or two things in your program every once in a while where you're like, well, I'm not sure if this is really going to work, but I'm doing all these other things right. 98% of my program I know is going to work.
It's like that reality of you.
And this other 2% is going to probably work, and I'm going to test it.
You don't think it's
going
to work, but how the fuck do you know? You haven't tried it.
Yeah.
That's the attitude I like about Louis. It's experiment. We'll see. Maybe we'll do 100 hamstring curls. If it makes our hamstrings tougher, maybe we can train harder on it. Fuck,
no
I don't know.
Doubt.
Try it. If it works, you're going to wait around for an NSCA study on it to start incorporating it? I mean, no, you're not. You're going to try to play with something and see what you get a result.
Absolutely.
You'll be 5 to 10 years behind.
That does
time.
Not go on enough in weightlifting to where you just literally try new
all
things
research works
and see if they work. In 2006, I did a total West Side view with Olympic lifting. Mm-hmm. And there's a crazy video of me doing snatches with bands, cleans with chains.
I think I remember that.
Yeah, insane. I did overhead squats with chains. I did overhead squats with dangling kettlebells. It was insane.
Holy shit.
I don't know what I was thinking. Like, I look back, I was in a very mantic state. And so, so I lost my mind. And so, but I will tell you this, I got strong really fast. So, whatever.
You can say whatever you want about the efficacy of that. From like a scientific perspective,
I got
but
strong.
It was fun as shit. And if it's fun as shit, you're gonna train hard.
I got
if you're training hard, you're gonna get stronger.
You know, that
I
is
got
a
an athlete. I'm thinking
comment.
Right now, I'm gonna hang kettlebells with a band on a bar and have
come on, you sons of bitches, let's get wild.
Let's do it.
Yeah,
that's a big part of the novelty. Like Chris just said, the fact that it's new and it's fun, like that's a big part of motivation for a lot of guys, especially the guys that aren't trying to be world champions. They give a shit what happens. They're going this way. They're gonna lift heavy and hard every single day, no matter what. Those people, maybe they don't need it, but for regular people that they've been training for a while and they're kind of getting to like the grind of training, and they want to have some like unique experience every once in a while that's fun, and it re-engages them and makes them a little more motivated to come in on that one particular day.
Yeah.
Yeah, like doing something new and novel, even if the research doesn't back it up, once in a while is a good thing.
I would recommend a balance, like the periodization rules that I would abide by would say the younger you are, the more things should be a little constant, because you got to adapt to something. Because if you're too variable and like you're squatting, maybe you won't get good at squatting. But if there's consistency there and you're building, you got to bake in randomness. Like Zach's guys, these students here, these little kids, you wouldn't say variation will work for them, but they're young ADD crazy kids who are untrained. If they're having fun or mixing up here, they're dragging a different sled every day. He's doing things like the sled is always there. The pull-ups are always there. The squats are going to be there. The carry and drag is going to be there. But the deadlift bar will change. The kind of thing they drag will change. The grips on the pull-ups will change. You can't just have them do pull-ups, 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 pull-ups with the same grip. They're going to just get bored.
And these are wrestlers.
Yeah.
They have strange strengths anyway, just like you MMA guys. That grip strength is ridiculous. I don't even know what that is. But, you know, you've got to change it up and make it hard for these guys, because wrestling, for example, changes all the time. Mm-hmm. Like how long it's going to last. You know, you might pin a guy in 30 seconds. So you use a whole different strength system right there. But, like, if it lasts the whole three rounds, I mean, it's all, you don't know what's going to happen. A guy might throw you. You got to roll out of it.
Be ready for things that aren't planned.
Right. Yeah. And so Zach's planning is, you don't know what you're getting into. I bet his athletes, as they walk in the door, I bet they're like, all right. You know,
he's got this great video you showed us on his cell phone where there's this one like that. He's this jacked fucking little game 18-year-old guy. He's like, yeah, come on, who wants to wrestle? And all these kids are like, I ain't wrestling, man. They're all sitting on the curb going, man, this guy's got his shirt off. He's pacing around. He's like ready for it. And Zach's like, come on, who wants to wrestle this guy? Come on, let's go. He's trying to get the energy up.
Yeah.
And one guy's, you know what? Let's do it. The guy's like skinnier. He's like, you know what? Fuck it. He goes for it. They mix it up. He ends up pinning the guy. And all of a sudden, these kids get up, what? And they're all like in his face going, yeah. But the energy, boom, is different. Now, all these guys have like, if you just have a periodization plan with these kids, oh, I'm going to do this carefully, you're not going to get a fucking result out of these kids.
No.
It's better than not doing anything. No. But that's the kind of thing, that fun thing, that random thing, cracks open the possibilities for these guys. Now they start mixing it up. Now they're going to drag that sled with another fucking 45, two 45s extra on it.
Right.
That's what you need.
This place.
So what are like the big three weaknesses you've seen over the years, and what assistance movements have you used successfully to fix those weaknesses?
Oh, I think the thoracic spine, being able to stabilize the spine, especially in the scapula. So we've used what we call plate extensions, where we're hinged at the hip, and we're flexing. I guess let me demonstrate real quick.
Yeah, go ahead and demo it. Sure.
Like, pretend there's a plate in my hand.
Is what Trav's doing, sort of like in a bent over row position, and he's sort of rounding the shoulder blades forward and rounding up. So he's not like actually doing a bent
row. You're holding it, you know.
You're holding the plate, yeah, bent over, and you're kind of shrugging up, back, and, right, and down.
How strong is strong enough in that movement?
There's no such thing. Because, you know, like guys with John, you got to be able to stabilize the spine as you're, you know, in that really wide grip of the snatch with, you know, 300 and almost 70 pounds, or some people are stronger.
So are you throwing that into the guys' warm-ups and having them just hold a 45 or in do 15 reps? Or are you having them like stack up some plates and do like triples with that? How are you doing this?
We're doing it at the end because, you know, I don't want to, you know, because you're going to get weak. It's going to crush your back. So I don't want to weaken their spine, you know what I mean, before they get ready to do their big lifts. And so it's at the end. And it's like for several. It's hypertrophy. We're trying to build a little bit. Muscle, a little stabilization.
10, 15.
You know, and the main thing is the time that you hold, and because these are isometric contractions that you have to hold during the lift. You're right.
Okay.
Yeah, you don't just rep it out. You're gonna hold it 5-3 seconds in between each rep.
How much weight are they doing?
Just a plate, like
it's 45.
You know, like John would use a 20, like a red 25 kilo, 55 pounds.
So 55 pounds.
Yeah. So,
but probably if you're gonna do it, start off as light as you want, because that's not what the weight is, not important. Just doing, I think with assistance work, people do it because they feel like, I gotta do it. Like, I'll just do some glute ham. I'll just do this, that. But not really thinking about what they need to get out of it. Like, what's the purpose of it? The purpose is not to see how much you can shrug back with your shoulder blades.
Right.
Obviously, the purpose is, I gotta feel how I'm moving. I gotta hold it. And I slowly progress that up.
Right.
You're not, the ego will get in the way and you end up popping your back if you try to row a 100-pound plate because you think that's what's gonna give you the result.
Okay. I think if I could give you your audience the biggest nugget to be a game changer would be this: the front squat pauses that we do. Now, I'm going to explain it quickly, and here's how it goes. Well, first of all, let me tell you that our lifter, Easy, went from being the weakest guy on our team to a nationally ranked weightlifter over the course of him doing this, what I'm about to tell you. So you take a front squat, you walk it out, you squat it in the bottom, hold it 7 seconds, come up, hold it 15 seconds, rack it. You work up to a max single like that, do a few drop sets doing the same exact.
7 and 15.
7 and 15. Then you do like
7-15 method.
A 3 weeks wave of that. Then you drop it to 5 and 12. Then you do for 3 weeks. And then you do the last wave is for 3 and 10. If you do that, guaranteed, number one, not only will your squat go up, but the weight, the stabilization that you have throughout the lifts will go up, and you will get stronger. That is your nugget for the day.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Thanks. Yes. I think we'll close with that.
All right.
Appreciate it.
No problem.
What do you want to promote? You got Attitude Nation. You got Weightlifting Talk.
MashElite.com. You can pretty much get all of our products and check out our seminars there. Also, Weightlifting Talk. Check us out. And that's pretty much Twitter at MashElite, Instagram MashElite Performance.
There you go.
I'm writing down his front squat tips.
I'm telling you,
I gotta get my front squat moving.
That is the nuggets.
I'm just gonna text you later.
All right.
Write down all those nuggets. I'm ADD.
I'll give it to you, brother. So
you can totally watch this episode whenever you want. That's by right. the way,
make sure you get it.
It's on
I can.
You can watch it on the way home.
Oh, yeah. We forget about that.
Oh. Make sure to go to barbellshrug.com, sign up for the newsletter so we can email you all sorts of nuggets and pearls. See you next time.